hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's stand up and cheer for the Copa America Centenario football tournament here in the United States. Chile beat Colombia Wednesday night 2-0 at Soldier Field in Chicago to set up a rematch in Sunday's final against world number one Argentina. Last year, playing at home in Santiago, Chile beat Argentina 4-1 on penalty kicks after 120 minutes of scoreless football. It was Chile's first Copa America title. In Chicago, Chile got first-half goals from Charles Aránguiz and José Fuenzalida. The second half was delayed by more than 2 hours because of thunderstorms that drenched the pitch. For more on the match, VOA sports reporter Ben Cento called Chicago and reached Celia Mendoza of the Voice of America's Spanish branch. And Ben asked Celia, how did the delay affect the teams?
I think it was something that was haunting pretty much the whole day, not just the teams, but also the authorities of the game and the fans. Initially, we thought it was going to possibly be delayed. At one point, it was talked about being postponed until today. We saw the bulk of the weather come around the midtime during the 15-minute break, which delayed pretty much the second half for 2 hours. That definitely affected not just the game, but also the whole mood in the stadium. It created a time where people were, eventually we saw the teams playing in a very, very dangerous conditions. The floor was completely wet. They were happy, though, to be able to play because it also was talked about moving it to today at 2 p.m. local time, and that would have affected whomever wins their last game because it will give them less time. So definitely weather was a big factor during this match.
You mentioned the fans and their frustration. Did the fans stay through the weather, or did they end up leaving?
They actually stayed through the weather. Most of the people that were there were Colombians. We saw a large group of Chileans, but the bulk of the fans that were at the stadiums were Colombians, and they definitely were supporting their team. It was interesting because during that time, they were hoping that something changed and the team to be able to beat Chile and to get the 2 goals that they had already been scored by Chile and try to make sure that they were able to give an opportunity to pass to the final in New Jersey. But definitely fans were there the whole time. And even at the end, when we saw 2 fans from Colombia jump into the field to try to get to the players, they end up being tackled and taken out. Shows you the passion that those fans had, and they want to make sure that the team knew it.
I know you're Colombian. What could the Colombians have done better to get a win last night?
I think they were very disorganized. They were surprised by the first goal scored by Chile, and we saw the second one. We had no defense close to the goalkeeper, and I think we needed more structure. The players were a little bit out of tune. We didn't see them as usual. Colombia is very well known for playing as a well-organized team where we have coordination and when we have a very strong defense, but also the forwards always try to create opportunities. We didn't see that yesterday. Actually, James Rodriguez, which is the number 10, the captain of the team, he seemed frustrated. And at the end of the game, we actually saw his attitude completely change. And I think that has to do also with the leadership of the Jose Pekerman, which is the leader of the team, the coach. And I don't know exactly if the team knew what they had to do over the whole game. They created a couple of opportunities, but definitely Chile was superior in the game.
You mentioned James Rodriguez's attitude. Could you describe his performance and if that affected the outcome in any way?
Yes, I think he didn't start the game as he finished it. If we had seen that James Rodriguez that was playing the last 15 minutes of the game at the beginning, the story could have been different. He was not showing the true colors, what it has made them a well-known name around the world. And that also probably shows you what the reservations that other coaches have had with him, and that particularly on his current team, the Real Madrid in Spain. And that is pretty much what I've seen over the past few games. If he doesn't start strong, then he doesn't actually show you what he can do. And that's not very good for a captain. I'm not saying that he's not a great player. He is. But sometimes I believe that he lets his head get to him, and that affects the physical talent that he has.
With Chile's win, they now have a rematch lined up with Lionel Messi in Argentina. Could Chile possibly repeat, or is this Argentina's year to win?
Well, we were speaking to the players yesterday, and they were very excited to be able to have that, to win outside Chile. Last win was actually in Chile, and they've been criticized about that. So we think that it is a very, very close match. They recognize Argentina. It is an amazing group of players. Messi has shown that he is on top, and it will be a game to really watch. We are hoping to see two teams trying to give everything on the field. Chile could win. We saw how they played with Colombia. We saw how they play against Mexico, 7-0. But also, Chile has to take care of a lot of details in terms of organizing their team to not let Argentina get close, because that's the thing. If Lionel Messi has an opportunity and a little spot to get in, he will. And that's something that they have to be careful.
I have to ask your opinion on this now. If Lionel Messi finally gets that elusive major international tournament title, where would you put him on your list of all-time greats?
I think he will be one of the all-time greats. It is very difficult because Argentina has so many good players and everybody has to live under the shadow of Maradona. But at this point, I think he has accomplished way more than Maradona has in terms of scores and numbers, being the player that has scored. He made history last game, scoring the most amount of goals wearing the Albiazul, which is the blue and white shirt, the name that they give to the Argentinian shirt. And he will be definitely a player that has been known in the world as one of the most kind and just not as typical players. It will be, for me right now, will be the second after Pelé.
That's Celia Mendoza of the Voice of America's Spanish branch. And Celia was speaking with VOA sports reporter Ben Cento from Chicago, Illinois. Joining us now with an update on the European Football Championship in France is VOA sports reporter Jonah Haskell. Sporty greetings, Jonah.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The knockout stage in France is set after the last flurry of group stage games yesterday. 16 of the original 24 teams advanced, as they needed to place within the top two in their group or within the top four third-place teams. Portugal secured one of those four third-place spots with a 3-3 draw against Hungary, as Cristiano Ronaldo scored two goals to become the first ever player to score in four different Euros. Hungary, playing in their first major tournament in over 30 years, wins the group, while Iceland scored on their last kick of the game against Austria to win 2-1 and secure their advancement as the second-place team. Iceland has been the feel-good story of the tournament so far, as the tiny nation of only 300,000 people has yet to lose a game in their first-ever European Championships appearance. Fans in the Icelandic capital of Reykjavik are overjoyed by the result.
It has been an absolutely glorious moment. It's going to be a party throughout Reykjavik all night long. We're finally out of the shadow. We're into the 16th. It was a glorious moment.
Absolutely amazing. Yes, it's a great day. Wonderful. We're just so happy to be in the competition in the first place. But to win Austria, it's amazing. Yeah, in the last seconds.
Iceland is set for a tough round of 16 game against England, but as they demonstrated in the group stages, this team is more than capable of pulling off an upset. Also yesterday, Ireland dispatched Italy 1-0 to secure a third-place advancement from Group E, but Italy will still win the group as they were victorious in both of their other games, while Belgium used the goal from Raja Nainggolan to defeat Sweden 1-0. The win secured a second-place finish for the Belgians, whose fans, in Nice for the game, are thrilled to move on.
It's better. The best sensation. The world is ours. La Belgique est magnifique. Le monde est à nous, les gars. Une étoile. Merci.
Pretty good. I mean, we won, so you can't feel any better, so...
Well, a number of fans probably couldn't feel any worse as eight teams are going home. They are Romania, Russia, Ukraine, Czech Republic, Sweden, Austria, Albania, and Turkey. As for the surviving teams, their round of 16 matchups are set. The knockout stage begins on Saturday when Switzerland faces Poland in Saint-Étienne, Wales and Northern Ireland play in Paris, and Croatia takes on Portugal in Lens. On Sunday, host France will play Ireland in Lyon, Germany and Slovakia meet in Lille, and those excited Belgian fans will watch their team play against Hungary in Toulouse. The final round of 16 matches will take place on Monday, when Iceland looks to continue their amazing run against England in Nice, and Spain will face Italy in Saint-Denis. I'm VOA's Jonah Haskell. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Jonah. Just ahead on the sunny side of sports, the 2016 National Basketball Association draft. Stay tuned.
The Voice of America, VOA.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association will hold its annual draft of college and international players later Thursday night at Barclays Center Arena in Brooklyn, New York. And joining us now to chat about that draft is Dan Friedel of VOA's Learning English Department. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Sonny. Thanks for having me again. We've had a lot of excitement with the end of the 2016 basketball season, and before you can catch your breath, it's time to get ready for the draft.
This draft, how does it compare with previous drafts, Dan?
Well, there's a clear number one pick, which is helpful in some ways because then it helps the general managers and the scouts and everybody start ranking 2, 3, 4, 5 and on down the list. People think it's maybe not quite as deep as in the past, and perhaps maybe the top player isn't going to be quite as good as the top player from last year, who was Carl Anthony Towns, the talented center coming out of Kentucky, who went on to be the Rookie of the Year last year for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
The Philadelphia 76ers had the worst record during the regular season, and partly because of that and the luck of the draw, they get the first pick in the draft. Who are they likely to select?
They are going to go for Ben Simmons, who's a guard-forward combination player from Louisiana State University. Simmons has been compared by some people to LeBron James in the sense that he has this multifaceted game. He's not just a scorer. He's not just a rebounder. He's good at passing. He has good court vision.
Just a young competitor, somebody who can push the ball in transition, point-forward style of play, being 6'10", and being able to handle the ball.
One of the criticisms he received during the college season when he was playing at LSU was that he didn't take over a game as much as some of the fans might have wanted. In a game where he might have been able to score 30 points, instead he was getting 15 points and a bunch of rebounds and a few assists. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in wherever he winds up as to whether he is the kind of player that is going to excite fans in the way that they might want the number one overall pick to excite them.
The Los Angeles Lakers, now in transition with the retirement of Kobe Bryant, they have the number two selection. Who are they likely to choose, Dan?
Most of the mock drafts, some people call them mock drafts because they're funny and they don't wind up working out the way that people predict, but most of the projected drafts have Brandon Ingram of Duke as the number two player in the draft. After that, it's a little bit murkier in the sense that there are a number of talented players left on the board, but not one particular player that stands out among the next group of five or six players after that.
The NBA has become more international in recent years, with players from Africa, Europe, Asia, and all over the world now playing in the league. Are there any international players who we might see selected?
There's one player who stands out among the group of international players. He's probably going to go in the top five. It is a young Croatian. His name is Dragan Bender. He's played professionally in Israel with the famous European team called Maccabi Tel Aviv. He's 7'1".
I'm just a big guy. I can do a lot of things on the court, a little bit of everything on the defense and on the offense. So, we'll see what's going to be.
The Boston Globe, in a story, called him the NBA draft's most intriguing prospect. He's similar to Kristaps Porzingis, who impressed in his rookie season with the New York Knicks. He's not quite as tall as Porzingis, but he is an athletic player who can shoot the three-pointer. And just because of his height, he could be a force inside if he develops that part of his game a little bit more. It'll be interesting to see if he goes as high as some people think he might, which could be the fourth or fifth pick.
Dan, are there any other international players with perhaps a good backstory?
There is an interesting player from the University of Kentucky. And you know that Kentucky has this stock of players. They always manage to get one or two of the best players in the country, and they only stay for one season in college. So there's a Haitian player. His name is Scal Labissiere, and he played for Kentucky this past year. He's a very tall player, and he has an interesting background because he was a teenager living in Haiti during the earthquake that was in 2010, and the building he was living in collapsed, and he had to be rescued. So it's an amazing thing to think that here he is 6 years later, he's going to be possibly one of the top 10 picks in the NBA draft.
Dan, one of the international players from yesteryear in the NBA, Arvydas Sabonis, he might have some viewing interest in the draft. Tell our Voice of America listeners about that.
So Sabonis' son, Domantas, who played for Gonzaga, we know that Gonzaga has been one of the top teams in college basketball over the last 10 to 15 years. They were famously known for a long time before that as the alma mater of the great point guard John Stockton.
That's right.
But Sabonis was born in Portland because his father was playing in the NBA for the Portland Trail Blazers. And it'll be interesting to see which team goes with Sabonis. I mean, he has the bloodline that's very impressive.
I think it's just overwhelming. I'm really excited. I want to see where I end up. And it's just my whole family's here to support me. So that's awesome having them here.
His father, Arvydas, didn't make it into the NBA until he was really on the backside of his career. And he managed to have some excellent seasons, but clearly physically diminished by bad knees and the wear and tear of playing for so many years before he came to the NBA. But if Sabonis has even maybe half the career that his father had, he'll be a great draft pick this year.
Thanks, Dan. That's Dan Friedel of the Voice of America's Learning English Department speaking with us here at our VOA studios in Washington. VOA sports reporter Tadia Bedje joins us once again this evening. Tadia, we heard Ben Simmons with that Australian accent. I love it. I love it. I realize Simmons will be joining Andrew Bogut and Matthew Dellavedova, who recently played in the NBA Finals. The Aussies making their presence felt in the NBA.
Absolutely. Ben Simmons is clearly the best player in this year's draft, and he'll be likely going to the Philadelphia 76ers, which needs some hope. They need hope. After all these years of losing, they need Ben Simmons.
They need Ben Simmons. Very versatile player.
Very versatile. He's being compared to LeBron James because of his ability to pass the ball and then his unselfishness and his court vision and his ability to attack the basket. Although he does have the LeBron gene of not the inability to take over a game, and he doesn't have a consistent jump shot.
Well, he's young, so he can improve, and we'll watch his development. I think our friend Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America social media reporter, might be talking NBA draft this evening. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Thursday?
It is indeed draft day, so that is the talk of social media. A lot of anticipation for the beginning of the draft tonight. A lot of just tweets where people just say draft day. There was one that was just draft day, draft day, draft day, draft day, over and over again. As people are so excited, you know, for their team. They're wondering who their team is going to pick. There's a lot of mock drafts. You know, we have like fantasy football, fantasy baseball, these fantasy sports. Well, they have these kind of mock drafts that they put together who they think is going to get picked by what team and what order. And a lot of people noting that it's going to be a busy night for the Boston Celtics. They have 8 draft picks that they've worked their way through trades and other things. So they're going to pick 8 players through the draft. It's going to be very, very busy for them. So a lot of Celtics fans are excited. They're thinking maybe this is the start of going back to the greatness of that team that just a few years ago they were winning championships and doing quite well, and they haven't been doing as well recently. So they're thinking that this might be the way to get back to that.
You mentioned excitement surrounding the draft, Andrew. I imagine the tailors in New York City are excited because all of these young players, they always get so dressed up for the occasion.
Absolutely. It's as much as there's excitement about who's going to get picked and what teams are going to get what players, it's an excitement, too, about what crazy outfits they're going to wear. Talked about this with the NFL draft, the National Football League draft, that there were some very interesting sartorial choices. So I'm sure you'll see some of that tonight. And actually, we've seen, because today is Thursday, some throwback Thursday posts to some past number one picks and some past big names that were picked. And there were some from the late 90s, early 2000s, where you can tell it was the late 90s and early 2000s just based on the suits they're wearing and the style of clothing. So we'll definitely see some interesting choices tonight. That'll be something else to watch.
And in terms of attire, they usually give the players a ball cap with the team's logo or emblem on the cap. But oftentimes they'll end up wearing a different cap by the end of the night. Well, I won't say often, but if there's a trade, they might have to quickly find another ball cap.
Yeah, and that's what social media is going to be tracking. There's going to be a lot of amateur analysts out there in social media land saying, that was a great pick, or I'm so excited, or that was awful, trade him. We're going to see that's kind of the sub-draft. You're watching it on television, you're seeing it happen, but then you can kind of look to social media and see how the fans are reacting.
Andrew, on yesterday's show, you mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo tossing a reporter's telephone into a lake. Has that phone been recovered at this point?
You know, I don't know, but I am sure that if they sent him the bill, he'd just say, fine, I'll pay it and go off on that. But it was a moment that captured social media's attention for sure.
Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
When we're talking about the future with the draft, I want to jump back to the recent past with the NBA Finals. And I want to give a hat tip to our business reporter up in New York, Jill Malandrino, because she sent me some stats from someone from the NBA sent her as far as the social media and the viewership. But we'll start with the television. This is actually the most watched NBA Finals since 1998. Mm. And Game 7, that epic Game 7, was the third most watched NBA game ever.
Mm.
So huge numbers on TV. But even more striking than the TV numbers are the social media numbers. 5.2 billion impressions on social media. It's billion with a B, and 800 million video views on social media. During Game 7, it was 337,000 tweets per minute on Twitter. That's how much excitement there was and how much people were tweeting about this. And then on Facebook, it was the most talked about NBA Finals ever on Facebook, with over 269 million comments and 43 million posts, likes, shares, tons and tons of social media reaction from the fans out there. And another stat, not just in the U.S., this I thought was very fascinating as we talk about these sports leagues expanding. China actually had 15.3 million viewers. It was the most viewed NBA game ever in China on digital platforms.
Interesting.
So over 15 million people in China watched it digitally. So we talk about some of these big players coming over maybe from China. I know Yao Ming was, of course, one of the first. There may be more because there's a lot of interest over in China and over in Asia for the NBA. But some fascinating numbers that bottom line, this was an event. It's with a capital E, an event.
And the NBA must be happy with those numbers,
well,
Andrew.
Well, at the bottom of this sheet, it talks about some of the merchandise. And let me just say, you know, I'll summarize and say it was very financially lucrative series for the NBA. They made a lot of money in their team stores.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thanks again, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the June 23rd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Kwame Ofori. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2015, terrorism continued to bedevil significant portions of the African continent. In East Africa, the Somalia-based terrorist group Al-Shabaab continued launching attacks and suicide bombings in Somalia, frequently targeting Mogadishu International Airport, Somali government facilities and hotels popular with government officials and business people. The terror group also set its sights on Kenya. In the Lake Chad Basin region, Boko Haram continues its attacks in northeastern Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. In West Africa and the Sahel, terrorist groups have conducted attacks against hotels and a resort frequented by Westerners. In 2015, one of the key developments in the global fight against terrorism has been the increased level of international cooperation and coordination in addressing cross-border and regional terrorist activity. So, for example, the Lake Chad Basin countries formed the Multinational Joint Task Force to confront Boko Haram, while the Horn of Africa nations are coordinating their efforts against Al-Shabaab in Somalia. The United States is deeply involved in assisting its partners in their efforts to degrade and dismantle these terrorist threats. The U.S., in partnership with Somali forces, supports African Union forces in maintaining pressure on Al-Shabaab and weakening the group's territorial control in parts of Somalia. In North Africa, the United States helps support the Trans-Saharan Counterterrorism Partnership. Through this program, we have been working with Algeria, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, Morocco, Niger, Nigeria, Senegal, and Tunis to build the capacity and cooperation of military, law enforcement, and civilian actors across North and West Africa to counter terrorism. The Partnership for Regional East Africa Counterterrorism is a U.S.-funded and implemented counterterrorism partnership that includes Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, Tanzania, as well as Uganda, Burundi, Comoros, Rwanda, Seychelles, South Sudan, and Sudan. We are expanding engagement with African governmental and non-governmental partners to better understand the drivers of violent extremism and design effective responses, said Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The United States is committed to partnering with the people and governments of Africa to promote democracy, peace, and prosperity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct.
And adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 18-year-old prison sentence given to former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court for rape and murder in the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.